Good morning. So last time we talked again a little about machine code and assembly. We looked at our toy machine code we'll be using, which is this IBCM, the itty bitty computer. And this had some very simplifying properties. So the biggest thing is that we talked about real machines, like have 4 to 13-ish registers. We have a single accumulator register that everything uses. We also had a pretty small memory. We had only 12-bit addresses, and each address referred to a 16-bit value, not a 8-bit value like our memories. And our accumulator was 16 bits, and this meant that we're always dealing with 16-bit values in this machine, or 12-bit addresses. And because we had this one accumulator register, and we probably want to do computations on more than one value, most of our instructions dealt with that accumulator register and some value in memory somewhere. That's how our machine dealt with having only one register, whereas we saw in our brief preview of like an x86 instruction that x86 has instructions where you deal with multiple registers and things like that. We don't have that option because we don't have multiple registers besides the special ones like the program counter, which we can't really use for normal computation because, well, that's where we find out what thing to do. We talked briefly about the instruction format. So in IBCM, every instruction was 16 bits. This meant that all our memory accesses were always getting 16 bits. We don't ever get a byte or 32 bits. It's always 16 bits, no matter whether we're getting code or data. When we're getting machine code, the top 4 bits, the most significant 4 bits, are what we called the opcode. They specify what operation to do, and so we have 16 possibilities, and we have this table, what they did. And most of the time, because we dealt with the accumulator and a value in memory, we used the rest of the instruction, the rest of that 16 bits, for an address. We had a few exceptions to that. For example, cases like halt, where we didn't have anything else to say, and cases like the I/O instructions and the shift instructions, where we had one opcode saying this is some sort of I/O, but we had sort of some extra bits to say what kind of I/O it was or what kind of shift it was. We also talked about some assembly concepts. So we had this machine code format, and we want a reasonable way of writing down programs for that machine code. We don't want to go all the way to C. We want to have a single definite translation to the machine code. But we don't want to also have to count how many bytes are between two things. And we also want a way of saying that I don't want an instruction here, I want some value. So for avoiding counting bytes and such, we had this concept of labels, which would be names we'd give to an address. So we'd mark an instruction with a label. And when we did that, what we'd mean is that when I use that label's name later on or earlier, I'm referring to the address that ends up at. And we also had directives. So our big example was DW for define word, which would be something that might look like an instruction, but won't actually turn into a real instruction. It's just specifying something we want in the data we produce for the machine. And our big use case for that is we wanted some variable. We're going to have some memory location with that variable. We want some constant, so we have some memory location with that constant. This is a way of writing it down while having every line look, you know, like instructions without writing like a big English comment that I want 1,000. I don't mean like 1,000 is the opcode. I mean, I want 1,000. We just write DW, in our case, 1,000. And when we finished off last time, we talked about how we go sort of from machine code to something like our assembly format. And our first step, whenever you look at IBCM instructions, is going to be, as we mentioned last time, to extract the opcode. And since it's the most significant 4 bits, conveniently, that's easy to see in hexadecimal format as the first hexadecimal character, which is probably why they chose 4-bit opcodes. So we can see what kind of instructions each of these are. And we can also, you know, see that we don't know some things. So we have opcode 3 is a load, but we have to read more to know exactly what that's doing. For halt, opcode 0, we know that it's a halt, even though these halts are different kinds of halts here. And if you think about, you know, if you found this in a real IBCM program, you'd probably think probably those aren't really meant to be used as halts. But probably what happened is that this was something like DW0, and this was something like DW0XF, and so on. Probably. But we don't know, because the only way we can find out the difference is by, you know, figuring out, well, what is this value actually used for? That would give us the best idea of whether the first thing is really a halt, or that's really a constant zero something else is using. Because it could be both. So then we want to decode the remaining parts of the instructions. And we have these add and load. And for those instructions, the remaining part of the instruction is the address. So we can just write out the address. If we were wanting to translate this to something more readable, we want to figure out, well, what is 2? What is that? What's a good name for that value? And when we've gone to machine code, we've lost that sort of information. So we have these labels in our assembly, but when we look at the machine code that will generate from that assembly, we don't know any names, we just have a number. And that's all we have. And if you want to figure out what the code does, well, you're going to have that number, you start out with that number, and you probably look at what the instructions that are manipulating it and try to come up with a guess for a name so you can continue figuring out what is this machine code actually meant to do. Like, is it a sort? Is it just adding some numbers? So, and then we have these two opcodes here where they represent some kind of I/O operation or shift operation. So there we had to look at some extra bits. And if you remember, our extra bits to tell the kind of thing were the next bits after the opcode. So part, the first two bits of the next nibble. So we just figure out what those two bits are. So in this case, the top two bits are 10. In this case, they're 01, which we know it's 10 because we have 100 for 8, and 01 because we have 0100 for 4. And we look it up in that table I showed you earlier. That would be this table for the shift ops, and this table for the IO ops. And we find out what kind of operations they are. And I have the names I used earlier for them, print H for print as hexadecimal, and shift R for shift right. And for the shift, we have an additional thing, which is the amount to shift by. So shift right means we move the bits over to the right and add in zeros at the end, where we need some extra bits after doing that. And we have an amount to do that by, which is, if you remember our diagram, stored in the bottom bits. So we got our shift amount, which is 3. And that's our full decoding of these as instructions. So I decoded these as instructions. Note that even though I can interpret everything as instructions, it doesn't mean that it was actually meant to be instructions. Doesn't mean it's not going to be loaded as data. But this is what it would be if these are instructions. Okay. Yeah?
What does print H mean?
Print H means print as hexadecimal. So this is, print accumulator as hex. Okay, so let's look at sort of the next level, which is, let's say we have a program like here, and we want to figure out what it actually does. So this is a different program. And if you want to simulate it by hand, figure out what it does, rather than loading our existing simulator, first step is going to be, let's translate this to instructions. So I've just done that here. And then we can just go through and mechanically keep track of our PC and our accumulator as we go through the instructions. So if we execute the, we start our PC at zero, so that's, I believe, our convention for IBCM is that the PC starts at zero. So we start our PC at zero, this loads our instruction 3000 into the instruction register, and that's a load zero if we interpret it as an instruction. And address zero is the same thing, so we load that address into the accumulator, so we have 3000 in the accumulator. Then we advance to the next address. Because we didn't do a jump of any sort, our default next PC is just going to be adding one. So then we run add zero. And what add zero does is it loads from address zero. It doesn't add the number zero. It loads the value at address zero and adds it. So we take our old 3000 and add the address value at address zero, which is also, 3000 hex. And we get 6000 hex in the accumulator. Then we have subtract one. Remember, this is subtract not the constant one, but the value at address one. And if you look at the value at address one, that's 5000, so we get 1000 in the accumulator. So next we have OR with three. So this takes 1000, and OR does a bitwise OR with the value at address 3, which is 60001. This is a bitwise OR, meaning that we take each of the bits and we decide based on that what it is. So we say the lower bit is 0 of this, and the lowest bit of this is 1. 0 or 1 gives us 1. So the last bit of our result. Yes. Wow. And we get the wrong answer there. Last bit of our result, this is not 6001, this is 8003, which I have highlighted, so I remember that. So we get 8003. So the last bit of 8003 is 1. So 0 or 1 is 1. The last, second to last bit is 1, so 0 or 1 is 1. And the third to last bit is 0. 0 or 0 is 0. And we do this to write out our binary number. So for example, for our top bit, we have one top byte, we have top nibble, I should say. We have 1 equals 1000. And we have, in the accumulator, we have 1000, so top nibble of 1. We OR these together, we get 0 or 1 is 1, 0, 0, 1, and this is 9. And that's why we get 9 in the top nibble of our results. And we do that for each nibble. I'm guessing this is, and that's what the bitwise OR operation does. So I believe it turns out that you won't have to use the bitwise OR operation very much, but that's what we mean by it. This is not a logical operation. We don't treat the values as true or false. We're doing, looking at each bit of the byte, of the word in pairs. Any questions about this? Okay. So we have 9003 hex in our accumulator. After that, then we do not. Not says flip all the bits. So we just flip all the bits of that value. And then we have a store instruction. So this store instruction says that we take address 0 as our destination and we put our accumulator into it. So our accumulator is 6FFC. We put that into address 0. And previously, address 0 was a load instruction, but now we've put a different value there. And so I'm going to update my mapping of what it is as an instruction, and it's a subtract FFC. Where FFC is our hexadecimal value. of the address we subtract from the accumulator. Then we have our branch and link instruction, and this sets the accumulator to PC plus 1. So it sets the accumulator to 7 and sets the PC to the target to the address we specified, which is 0. So this means that the next thing we'll execute is that subtract FFC instruction. So we'll take the accumulator, which now contains 7, and whatever's in memory at address FFC, and subtract that from it. So questions about what goes on here? So this is so besides maybe the mechanics of the OR operation, this is probably the sort of thing we could ask you to do with a reference for IBCM on an exam. So okay, so we're going to talk about some IBCM programs. And this is to give you an idea of, you know, you can mechanically figure out what happens if we give you a program and ask you what's the value of the accumulator and so on. But you actually want to produce useful programs that do something. And you want to do this in the same way. So first I'm going to talk about some sort of style issues. So our simulators, they look at the first four characters of the line. They interpret it as a hexadecimal value. This is just their input format. You know, that's how they know how to load the memory. And they ignore everything else. So we suggest that you take liberal advantage of the rest of the characters of the line when you're hand converting your assembly or equivalent to machine code. And one suggested format that we use is to have on every line the address of that line, because you're going to need to, by hand, resolve labels into addresses, and that's a reasonable way of doing it. You're going to put a column for the labels, so you can easily look down that column and find out where a label is, and put a column for your operation name, and your address or other parameters for like shift right, your shift amount, and also put some comments in there. So for the labs, we want you to submit IBCM code, and we want to be able to like sort of read it. So please have comments, because otherwise it's obviously really hard to figure out what you meant, and especially if it's not quite right. Also, another thing is that it's wise to have some blank space. So for example, if you have a bunch of variable declarations, like you have IDW0, you allocate space for some variables, you might have some just extra space just in case, and have that when you have like a bunch of constants or space in your program, so you don't have to like put the next constant way down somewhere else. You can keep them all together. And we're not going to require you to produce like the most efficient possible IBCM code. We want you to like actually be able to make it by hand. Okay, so with that in mind, let's look at translating some things that might seem to be missing from IBCM. So one of these is if else. So we're used to programming languages where we have some way of saying if something, do something else. And we don't have a way of specifying this in IBCM because we don't have because we don't have like an instruction which includes another instruction inside it, which is what we're used to in high-level programming languages. But if you remember, we have two kinds of constructs. We have our these jump constructs. So we have jump, which is PC becomes somewhere. We have jump E, X, which is if the accumulator is 0, then the PC becomes something. And we have jump L, x, which is if the accumulator is less than zero, then the PC becomes something. So we have these instructions, which is what we're going to have to use to actually implement this feature. So so what we're going to do for this is we're going to first test our condition. And our condition here is b equals zero. Our jump e instruction does exactly that. So if it's zero, it goes somewhere. So we're going to say, we're going to load b into the accumulator. And now we can use jump e to do something if b is zero. And the do something, the only do something our instruction lets us do is go to another place in the machine code. So we're going to go to wherever S1 is. So we're going to have a label for S1, and we're going to end up jumping to there. And if it's not the case that we want to do S1, we're going to want to do S2. So I'm going to just jump to S2 in that case. So maybe there's some way I could have rearranged this to avoid one of to avoid that second jump. But for simplicity, I'm going to not do that. So then we have S1's code. We need to put that somewhere. So that's the target of our jump. So here, if it's zero, we go to here. And if it's not zero, we're going to have S2's code. And then we have S3's code. So this is the usual pattern we'll use for an if. We'll have a conditional jump for either to either the if or else case, to one of the cases. And then we'll go on somehow to the other case. And at the end of whichever thing we write first in our code, we're going to have to jump over the other case. So in this case, we had the if case was written first in our machine code. That meant it had to end with this jump here to skip ahead over the else. So this is an example of the pattern you can use to implement if-else and all your conditionals generally. So we'll have a bunch of jumps. If you're clever, you can move the S2 code afterwards and get rid of this jump S2. But you're going to still have basically at least two jumps to implement this. One of them is conditional. One of them's not, because you have to skip over either the else or the if case somehow. So any questions on what's going on here? So another thing we want is loops. We also want to do comparisons, which might not be the ones that are provided. So first of all, we need some way of comparing b greater than or equal to 5. And generally, the way we're going to do this is we're going to take our b and we're going to subtract 5 from it and look at that value because we have instructions that compare directly to 0. So by subtracting 5, we'll be able to have, we'll be set up so that will just work out. So we're going to load b, subtract 5, and then if that's less than 0, we want to move on past the loop. So our test is we start the loop, and the first thing we do is we check the condition. Do we actually want to keep going? Or are we done with this loop entirely? So we're asking if b minus 5 is less than 0, which is the opposite of the condition I wrote because this is when we want to exit the loop. Then I want to go ahead to S2. So then I'm going to have, if I don't do that conditional jump, I'm just going to keep going. So right after this, I'm going to want my code for S1. And when I'm done with S1, what I want to do next is I want to test again, do I want to keep going with this loop? I already wrote that code because I needed to check the first time. Do I do this loop even once? So I jump back to that. and that's going to keep going and execute S1 again if we need to. Otherwise, it's going to skip beyond the end of the loop. And finally, we, of course, need the code for S2. Yes?
What is sub?
Sub is subtract. So this takes the value here and subtracts it from the accumulator. So any questions about how you write loops like this? I note that for both the loop and the if-else, I've shown you one way of writing it. And there are other things that will work with the possibilities we have. So we could, for example, you could find a way of putting the jump L after S1, if you were clever enough, which may or may not be helpful. But you can come up with other ways of testing this condition. Okay, so now that we have these tools, let's look at a sort of possibly useful program. This is, we're going to read an integer from the keyboard, we're going to compute the sum from 1 to that integer, and we're going to print it. So sum of integers from 1 to that, so 1, 2, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, and we're going to do that in the naive way. We're not going to use the formula you might be able to prove inductively. We're just going to add the integers in a loop. And we already know how to write a loop, so that's just going to be applying what we saw that. And this is going to illustrate the procedure we'd recommend you use when you need to translate a program to IBCM. So the first step is we're going to write some pseudocode. So I'm not going to try to start writing instructions directly. I'm just going to write pseudocode that I'm going to translate basically line by line to IBCM. And for things like while and if, I know the pattern I use for that from sort of examples like what I've shown you, and I'm going to use that pattern again when I see another use case for it. So I have my pseudocode. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to need some variables and constants. So we have these variables n, I, s, and we have these constants 1 and 0. And so first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to allocate space to store those values because we know we can't fit them in registers. We don't have enough. So we're going to have space in memory for each of those values. And I also need the value 0 and the value 1, because I'm going to need to get that, to, for example, add 1 and to set something to 0 initially. So the first thing I'll do is I'll write, I'm going to have something called I, which I'm going to just say is initially some memory location which contains 0. I'm going to have something called S, which is a memory location which contains a 0, and I'm going to have the constant 1 and the constant 0. So this is just, I've said, these are the variables I need, these are the constants I need, I just made declarations for all of them. Now, this is not actually code I want to run, but I would, I think it's probably most convenient to have this on top of my file, so I'm going to skip over that. So I'm going to start my program with a jump instruction to skip over all those variables and constants and still have them near the top of my program. I could have put them elsewhere to avoid this, like right at the bottom, which either is a valid option. So then I look at each of these instructions. So I have read into n. So I look at my read instruction. So I insert my read instruction, and that reads into the accumulator. And after I compute a value in the accumulator, I'm going to store it where I need to store it, which in this case is n. So I just store into our location we reserved for n. Similarly, to set I load the value 1 into my accumulator, and then store it into I. Our general pattern is we make our accumulator have the value we want to assign to something, then store it in that value. And we typically do that by, you know, loading something, and maybe if we need to add, then we add something, you know, some variable by name, and so on. And so this is just a line by line translation of this program. You can just go line by line and write this hopefully pretty mechanically. Now, if you had a complex arithmetic expression, that might be a lot harder to figure out what you'd have to translate that as. And my first recommendation is make your pseudocode really simple. Your ideal pseudocode should be something where you can do this translation where basically each line is like two or three instructions. Yes?
One more basic question. So what does DW do?
DW is our define word. So this is our find word, mean not an instruction. So it means we don't have an instruction, this is just a value. So it's saying, in this case, for example, that at the thing I'm calling one, I just want the value one. It's not actually an instruction, I just want you to put the value one there. I don't care how that's interpreted as an instruction. I'm using it as a constant.
Is it valid assignment?
A valid assignment?
I mean, because I think like you do that in the later, the start block, right? But what does DW do?
So DW says that when I'm translating this to my to my actual file, I'm going to put, you know, for DW1, I'm just going to write the value 1 in my memory there. That's what it's saying. So, and we use this notation to indicate to us that I don't have the value 1 because that's a particular instruction. I have the value 1 because I want the number 1. Like, obviously, if we try to use it as an instruction, it's a halt as it happens. But that's not why we want that value there. And similarly, the 0, if it happens to be a halt, but that's not what we care about. We care that it's the number 0. Other questions about what's going on here? So these DWs are not instructions. They're just our notation for I need a constant in memory at this location. Everything else, we have instructions. And these all are going to turn into 16-bit values when we actually make this into machine code. Okay. So our next step is, after we've done that, is to translate the loop. So we have our variables and constants. We have this initial setup where we read and write. So then I want to translate the loop. So I'm going to do my boilerplate here. So I'm going to do my comparison. So I'm going to compute n minus I, and then I'm going to use this jump less than 0 operation. So like I have to make it so I'm doing a less than 0 comparison because that's the only option we have. We don't have a jump greater instruction. Just have jump less. And I'm going to use that to jump out of the loop. Otherwise, I keep going. So I have these two pieces of template, and then I need the body of my loop. So I'm going to translate those s plus equals I and I plus equals 1 line by line. So the general pattern for plus equals is we load a value, we add to it in the accumulator, and then we store back to where we loaded it from. So we do that for s and I, and for I and the constant 1, which we set up earlier. And that's the body of our loop. Any questions so far? Yes.
So why don't you just initialize a value before you I equals 1, s equals 0, why don't you just say I DW1 instead?
So the question is why back here why didn't I just get rid of this and put this here? Because I was being very literal about translating my pseudocode. Like, that would be a completely valid way of implementing it and would in fact save a bunch of space and not be hard to understand. Yes, but I didn't do it on my slide just because I'm showing the most mechanical possible procedure for doing this. But indeed, you can take little shortcuts like that, which will, you know, save you time and not be hard to understand. Okay. So the last thing we need is we have everything translated but this last instruction. So that's after the loop. We're going to load S and use our print instruction to print out the accumulator that we've loaded from S. Any questions about this whole program? Okay. So this is our assembly version. And our general recommendation when you're doing this is that you should use this kind of procedure. First, start by writing that high-level pseudocode, and you can use that very mechanical translation. You set up a block for variables and constants, and you just translate each line one by one. You have this pattern you use for loops and if statements where you insert have something to represent the top and the bottom of the loop, or something to represent the if and the else, and after the else and after the if, that you just put in there, and then you get this assembly code, and you can trace that assembly code by hand. So we'd recommend that you like check by hand, does this assembly code look like it works? You know, figure out what happens, make sure it actually corresponds to the pseudocode you wrote, and then translate that to IBCM machine code. And on this slide, I show you just the actual numbers you need, but hopefully the files you're submitting to us tell us more. So if we all only have a machine code file to go by, we have some idea what you were trying to do if it doesn't work. And then you should actually run into the simulator, and hopefully you discover it works. And if not, you probably iterate backwards to update your assembly code and update your translation. So any questions about that? So that's our general procedure. So we're going to go through next a more complicated task. So we're going to say an array sum. So we're going to read an address from the keyboard and a size from the keyboard. And we're going to compute the sum of an array that we assume has already been placed at that address. So we'll say when we run this program, we do some additional step of loading that array into memory. That's done before this code runs somehow. Like it's added to the end of our file, for example. So our pseudocode for that is going to look like this. And we just have this operation where previously we're doing s plus equals I. So it's very, very similar to that past example. But we have this bit of a problem. So we want to add a and I. We want to access this array element. So how do we do that? What instructions do we use? And we don't have a load instruction that can obviously do this. So we can compute the address of A. So we load A, which contains our base address of the array. So, you know. And we can add I, and that means the accumulator is now set to the address of the array element we want to access. And then we look at our table of instructions, and we find out that our instruction to load something requires a hard-coded address in the machine code. We can't use the accumulator for that. So we can't add two things together and access it. We have to have the address in that instruction itself. And similarly, for adding, the value we're adding, we can't say it's at an address I've specified in the accumulator. We have to have it hard-coded in that instruction itself. So our solution to implement this is going to be to write the add instruction. We're going to write an instruction where the opcode is 5 and the address, rest of the instruction, the remaining 12 bits, is that address that we can compute this way. So we can compute the address, so we're going to add that and add the opcode into it, and that's going to be an instruction which does this add in and op. So what this is going to look like is we have our add instruction, and this is sort of a template. So this has the opcode for add. So that's our template for the instruction. So a way we can do this is we load the add instruction and we add into it the address A. And if you remember, the lower 12 bits are where the address is. So just adding the address to it is going to set this to now be, you know, at this point we have, when we add A, if A is, say, this address 100, we have add 100, add hex 100. Then we add I, and if I is, say, hex 45, we have add 145 hex. So now we have the accumulator contains the machine code for our add A at I instruction, A index I. And so what we do is we store that to some place that the PC is going to get to. So we have this empty spot here, which is initially 0. And we're going to, by doing this store, we replace that with add A of I, which we've just computed. So then we load S, and now we add A of I to it with that instruction we just wrote. And because we can do this, you know, this is how we can do lots of operations, which it seems like, from looking at our list of instructions, aren't really possible. Like, it doesn't seem like you can do array accesses. Well, you can. And this is sort of proof that you can do that. And it requires taking advantage that all the parts of memory of the machine, they can be interpreted as either data or code, and we can take advantage of that. So any questions on how this trick works? So this is how we do S plus equals A of I. And I'm pointing this out because not only is it a weird trick, but it's something you're going to have to do in the labs. So, because we're going to have you do things on arrays, and this is how the only way you're going to have of accessing parts of an array, given that you have some I in index in memory that you want to use. Yes. Okay.
But what does our instruction actually do?
So add 0, the base instruction, says load address 0 and add it into the accumulator. And when we get our final instructions, it says load address hex 145 and add it to the accumulator and store the result in the accumulator. Yes.
So how would we call that? What would that look like?
So what do you mean we need to add that A? So we get, so this is all create the instruction.
Oh.
This is create, and this is run it. That, maybe that wasn't clear. So yeah, so the first part up, the store do it, we're storing into do it, we're computing the value that is the instruction we're gonna run. The next part is we're gonna run it and use it to add something to S. Yes. Where do I declare do it? So do it has a label here. Do it is literally this location in memory. Just like when I had jump loop, that was a location in the middle of my loop. Yes.
Where's S?
S is presumably somewhere up here. But I didn't write it down in this example. But it's presumably one of that block of variables and constants we set up at the top. Do it isn't because we want it to be in the middle of our code that we're running. Yes. And so IBCM is written so we can do this with add, but you can also do this with load and store. And pretty much most of the instructions take an address in this way. So you can have this template, which is just the opcode being set, and you can add in the address in order to turn that into a real instruction that you can run. And basically anything that in C would be a pointer to reference, this is how you're going to have to do it. So here in my template, so in my original code, I just have the value 0 at that memory location. It doesn't matter because I'm using store to replace it. So once I run the store, I replace this DW 0 with add A of I. Like, so it doesn't matter what's there, but I need some space. I can't just write do it and write my next and put a blank line because, well, there has to be something in memory there for us to replace.
Okay, but the command itself is still do it DW0.
Yeah, that's what I wrote in my assembly representation. I could have written like do it halt or, you know, do it OXFFFFF. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't matter. Because I'm replacing that word of memory with the actual thing I want to do. Okay. Before I ever get there. Like, I'm never actually executing what's originally there. So, yeah. So with this trick, then translating the code is pretty straightforward. It's similar to what we were doing before. So we have our block of constants and variables, and we have this special constant, which is the add instruction to fill in. That's one of the constants we end up needing. I guess I should write OX500. And we just do our mechanical translation. And again, you can see things where like I am doing I equals 0 when I don't have to, because I'm just mechanically just taking each line and writing assembly for it. Then I have my loop, which we'll go to next. And for the loop, I do my, I have my beginning of loop. And because we don't have a less than or equal comparison, we do some additional work to loop body. And I'd use that trick here in the loop body. So, yeah. So that's what I have for today. We'll finish up talking about IBCM on Monday. Maybe review this after you've looked at the pre-lab and might have more questions. And then we'll move on to talking about real, quote-unquote, x86 assembly.